from the opinion pages of the Wall Street Journal. This is Free Expression with Jerry Baker.
Hello and welcome to Free Expression from the Wall Street Journal editorial page. I'm Jerry Baker, editor-at-large of the Journal. If you're not already a subscriber, please do sign up wherever you do your podcast listening. This week, the U.S. economy. Are we still on target for that soft landing, or could it yet be a bumpy ride? On Wednesday, the Federal Reserve once again left its key policy interest rate unchanged at a 20-year high of more than 5%. But Jerome Powell, the Fed chair, made it clear that the central bank still expects to cut rates this year. And forecasts from Fed policymakers pointed to 0.75 percentage point cuts by the end of 2024. This despite the fact that the progress that's been made in reducing inflation over the last 2 years does seem to have stalled in the last couple of months. The Fed's favorite indicator of inflation, the Price Index for Personal Consumption Expenditures, or PCE, slowed to an annual rate of 2.4% in February. That's down from more than 7% nearly 2 years ago. But the core rate, the crucial core rate, that is, stripping out volatile items like food and energy, was at 2.8%. And that is well above the central bank's target of just 2%. What's more, inflation actually seems to be re-accelerating, with prices rising in the last 3 months at a higher rate than they were at the end of last year. And yet Jay Powell still told reporters on Wednesday that these setbacks in the inflation struggle were mere bumps in the road, as he put it. While he acknowledged that the outlook was still uncertain, he expressed confidence that inflation would still head down towards the Fed's target. Now, so much hangs on the Fed's judgment about inflation over the next critical few months. If Powell is right, and inflation is still moving down towards the target rate, then the central bank can ease policy, bringing relief to borrowers, and keeping the economy ticking over at the reasonable clip at which it's been operating. But if he's wrong, and inflation does turn out to be more stubborn than the Fed has been predicting, there's a high risk that rate cuts won't come anytime soon, maybe none this year. Some economists even fear that inflation may be so embedded that the Fed might need to raise rates again. Now, that would be terrible news for an economy which is already showing signs of some weakening. Unemployment is up in the last 6 months, and there's some evidence of slowing output growth. All this, of course, in an election year in which voters' negative perceptions of the economy have been weighing heavily on Joe Biden's re-election chances. So is the Fed right? Have we successfully navigated a path between inflation and recession, or are we still poised perilously between the two with the risk of going either way? Well, with me to answer all these questions this week, I'm pleased to say that I'm joined once again by Jason Furman. Jason's professor of economics at the Kennedy School at Harvard University, the author of many distinguished books and papers on economics. He also served as chairman of the Council of Economic Advisers under President Barack Obama. And Jason Furman joins me now. Jason, thanks very much for joining Free Expression.
Thanks for having me.
So let's start with the big economic news of the week, which is the Federal Reserve met this week, decided to leave its key policy interest rate unchanged as expected. But it made it clear, both through policymakers' forecasts and in Chairman Jerome Powell's press conference afterwards, that it still thinks it's very much on course to cut interest rates in the course of this year. The economic forecasts from the Fed policymakers called for a median of 0.75 point cuts in the Fed funds rate by the end of the year. Markets still seem to expect rates to start being cut by June. And all of this despite the fact that we've had some pretty rocky inflation numbers in the last couple of months. The progress that has been made, obviously bringing down inflation, does, if anything, seems to have hit a bit of a stall with some quite concerning numbers, but Jay Powell dismissed this increase in inflation as bumps in the road. What do you think? So the Fed still seems very much expressing some cautious confidence that it can continue to cut rates. What's your view? Do you think that's right? Do you think that that judgment, that this little uptick we've seen in inflation at the start of the year, is nothing to be worried about?
I'm much less certain than Jay Powell was at his press conference. And I sort of was sitting there wishing that they just had a statement and no press conference. The statement didn't say anything. They barely changed any words from the previous statement. But then it was in the press conference that all of that greater degree of optimism about the cuts coming came. And to be clear, I think they really may well be able to cut. They really may well be able to cut rates a couple times this year. But I just don't see why they need to telegraph it quite as much as they do. The last two inflation prints were really bumpy. They think that was just transitory, but they don't know. And obviously, they didn't raise rates in March. They've basically taken May off the table. There's going to be so much data between now and June. I don't think they really need to tell us much more other than what their reaction function is, as opposed to what their plans for rates are.
So why do you think they did? The market seemed to love it. As I say, the expectations of Fed funds rate cuts by June went up a lot. The stock market liked it. Why do you think he did it?
Look, first of all, I don't think it was a terrible mistake or anything like that. The most important thing is I actually trust that they're not going to cut rates prematurely. So I'm more worried that they're getting people's hopes up and will dash their hopes than that they're getting people's hopes up and they'll mistakenly follow through. I think they started this year with a world in which the six-month annualized core PCE inflation rate was 1.9%. It looked like maybe inflation was gone, and they got, you know, optimistic about that and started communicating that optimism, and it's hard to fully adjust back. You know, as I said, they have adjusted. They didn't cut rates in March. They're not going to cut rates in May, and so they really have changed with the data, but not all the way, maybe as much as they should have rhetorically.
Take us through those bumpy numbers that we had over the last couple of months. And I know you've commented on them a lot, but I wanted to sort of dig into them a little bit. As you say, at least these numbers are often sort of hard to disentangle because the annual rate is maybe declining. But if you look at shorter term trends, if anything, there seems to be a bit of a reacceleration. As you said, we started, the core PCE was around 2% at the start of the year. It has edged up. It is around 2.4% in February. But there again, there are some short-term indications that maybe that those pressures are increasing. How do you see what we've seen in the last few months?
Well, there was a big miss in January, and it was easy to discount that sum because lots of businesses raised prices in January, and the statistical agencies, as a result, need to seasonally adjust so that they're not just capturing the normal increases that happen every January. And you're never quite sure, are they getting that seasonal adjustment process right or wrong? You know, but then we got February, and February was another miss with inflation above expectations. Moreover, this happened despite some things, you know, things like used car prices were actually falling quite a lot and falling more than you could count on them falling. So there was even some good news in both of these prints. And that made the bad headline in some sense even worse that it happened despite this good news. I think one big piece of this is shelter. That's a huge part of the CPI. It's still a big part of the index that the Fed tracks, the PCE. And a lot of people, myself included, were counting on it slowing really dramatically. It was slowing for a while, but its slowing has halted. And some of that may be issues like, you know, some of the indices people were using to project a slowdown were disproportionately multifamily, and that was slowing down more than single family. And the index that the Fed tracks has more single family. There's a lot of technical stuff like that rattling around inside it. But, you know, the most important part is 2 months of bad news. And now when we look at the next 6 month annualized core PCE reading for inflation, instead of that 1.9 they were looking at 2 months ago, it might be as much as 3.0%. So that's just a very, very different picture of inflation over a short window of time.
Well, just to dig a little bit more deeply inside that, and again, I think you have pointed this out, what we've seen is goods inflation, the rate of increase in prices for goods, has come down a lot. Service price inflation didn't go up quite as much, but hasn't come down as much, right? And of course, service is a much larger part of the economy than goods. And there are indications, I think, aren't there, that things like wages, which are obviously a considerably important factor in that. The good news is we're finally seeing some sustained increase in real wages. Maybe the concerning news is that those are becoming embedded, particularly in service prices. Is that a sensible way to look at it?
Yeah. Everything you just said was correct, and I'll just expand on it a little bit. First of all, let me just say the tricky thing is any month, if you want to be optimistic, you can say all the bad things this month are going to go away and all the good things are going to continue. If you want to be pessimistic, you can do the exact opposite. And the truth is, it's a little bit of both. So on goods, there's been good news. Goods prices, broadly speaking, have been falling. And they've been falling at a rate that I think is not sustainable. And so that's one place where I would not extrapolate forward and continue to count on that declining. What has policymakers worried is if you look at the part of inflation that is core services, so not related to food or energy, and you exclude housing, that growth has picked up in the last couple months. That is the main cost of providing services like well, education, retail services, et cetera, the main cost of providing them is wages. And wage growth that we're seeing is more like what you'd think in a world of about 3.5% inflation rather than the, you know, 2% the Fed would like to see. So I think you really do see this line between wage growth, which remains above what is sustainable over the long run, combined with that non-housing core services inflation that's picking up.
And where does overall demand play in here and indeed into the condition of the labor market too? Obviously, the big positive news of the last couple of years is that despite this very rapid increase in interest rates that we've seen from the Fed and obviously market rates going up very high too, a lot of concerns that that would tip the economy into recession. It didn't. We know we've seen pretty solidly sustained growth. Unemployment has stayed low. We have, however, seen in the last 6 to 9 months, unemployment has ticked up and it's still below 4%, but up from 3.4%, whatever it was middle of last year, up to 3.9% now. Are we seeing any signs at all of a slowing in aggregate demand there that could play into this inflation story, either through wages or through some other way?
Different components of demand have been hit in very different ways. So you've had residential investment and business equipment investment have been falling over the last year and a half. Those are precisely the sectors that are most sensitive to interest rates. And so you really see the Fed's actions when you look in those sectors. What's kept the economy strong is the American consumer. And the American consumer just, continues to defy projections with how optimistic they are, not when they answer a survey, but when they actually pull out their wallet and decide whether or not to spend money. Now, for a while, there was a view, and I to some degree had this view, that this was related to their excess saving. They got all this money during COVID. They'd cut down their consumption during COVID. They had all this money stored up. And so, yes, you could continue that excess spending for a while, but eventually you'd run out of the excess saving and you'd hit a wall. We haven't hit that wall. In part, we haven't hit that wall because people are borrowing more, but I think the borrowing is not remotely excessive and could continue at the current pace for a while more. We also haven't hit that wall because real wages are now rising, and real wages are helping to support that consumption. And so are there cracks in demand? Probably. I certainly don't think the economy is going to grow at 3% this year, which is what it grew at last year. But for it to be a really big crack, you'd need to see a really big crack in the consumer. And, maybe you could see that in the monthly retail sales number for February or something. But I think that's reading too much into the data. I think we're not seeing that. I think we're seeing positive consumers.
You made this point there about this divergence between consumer sentiment as expressed in surveys and the actual data in terms of consumer spending. And it is quite striking in a number of kind of prominent economists, particularly economists like yourself, I suppose, that you're actually favorably disposed towards the Biden administration as they kind of try to figure this out, think that this is essentially a political thing, that Republicans don't like Joe Biden, and therefore whatever their own personal financial circumstances are going to say the economy's bad, Democrats are going to say, no, it's fine. I don't know what you think about it, but it seems a little more nuanced than that. And there have been some interesting other possible explanations here. And I think obviously the increase in the price level, even though the rate of inflation has declined quite significantly in the last 2 years, the fact that the people go to the shops and see that food prices are 25% higher than they were 2 years ago. What's your explanation for this apparent dissonance between the relative strength of the economy, low unemployment rate, robust consumer spending, but a pretty gloomy assessment of the state of the economy by large numbers of American consumers?
Yeah, so I think there are one, a lot of strengths in the economy. The unemployment rate's been low for a while now. GDP growth is high. Real wages are moving in the right direction. Inflation has come down. And I'd much rather have the U.S. economy than any other major economy in the world. So I think there's a lot of positive things to say. But there are two real reasons why a household in America would not be wrong to be disappointed right now. One is that mortgage rates are so high. And they're high in part because of all the fiscal support that helped bring about all the good results I just talked about. And the second is that we're still in a hole when it comes to real wages. Wage growth has outpaced inflation over the last 4 years, but only by a little bit. And it should have by a decent amount more. And so households, you know, are still in a hole, even if they're moving out of it on real wages. So I think there are some real reasons to be negative about the economy. Even with those real reasons, though, I have a hard time getting from them to quite as negative as people say. I mean, people's answers in polls sound like deep recession levels of negativity. The rational thing to me seems to get us to misgiving. So I think something outside of economics is playing to it. And partisanship is real. I don't know that it's part of the explanation, but Democrats are much less negative about the economy now than Republicans. And it was exactly the opposite under Donald Trump. So people are not dispassionate readers of economic circumstances. But I do think, and I agree, it's more than that that's going on. There are some real problems out there.
And just to elaborate the point you make about mortgage rates being high, and Larry Summers, your fellow Harvard economist, fellow former government official, prominent sort of Democrat-leaning economist, has written a piece recently pointing out that the interest rate burden generally on consumers could be a factor there, mortgage rates obviously being a key thing. But, you know, interest service costs on everything, you know, if you have a floating rate, most people obviously, as far as mortgages are concerned, have fixed mortgages. But if you have floating rates on credit card debt or on, you know, certain types of loans, then that would mean that you'd be facing kind of much more crimped financial conditions. Do you think there's something to that?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I think there's something to that. And you know, I had a reporter who was calling me, and they were favorably disposed to the Biden economy. And they were talking to me. And then halfway through, they're like, wait, I can't even move. I just had a child. I want a bigger house, but I have this great mortgage on my house, so I can't move. You know, that's someone who in the data, you wouldn't even see them paying higher mortgage payments. They're not. The data don't show that that person is locked into their house because of that mortgage. So it's not just people paying higher mortgages. It's people who can't move and would like to.
We're going
to
take a break there, but when we come back, I'll have more with Jason Furman, professor of economics at Harvard. We're talking about the immediate outlook for the economy, but perhaps also about some of the deeper changes that may have been taking place the economy and how it may change over the course of the next few years or so. Stay with us.
WSJ Special Access gives you a front row seat to some of the Wall Street Journal's most exciting content, like The Quirkier Side of Life, a new series that features the fun, surprising stories our reporters come across.
The chief executive walks 10,000 barefoot steps every day. He recalls stepping on a bee, which put him off earthing for a couple of days, but he got back to it.
Check out The Quirkier Side of Life on WSJ Special Access, only for WSJ subscribers.
You're listening to Free Expression with Jerry Baker. Don't forget, you can listen to the latest episode anytime on your smart speaker. Just say, play the Opinion Free Expression podcast. Now, back to Jerry Baker.
I'm back with Jason Furman, professor of economics at Harvard. We're talking about interest rates and the economy. Let's get back to the Fed. Just play hypotheticals for a moment. If inflation does turn out to be a little more persistent than they think, and if we're not making progress by June, by the second half of the year, towards the 2%, the official target, and the Fed is not delivering the first rate cut in June anywhere on the three rate cuts that we're speaking about the second half of the year, that we still have these persistently high rates, what's your best guess as to what happens in those circumstances? Would that still just reflect a relatively buoyant economy and therefore we wouldn't have to worry too much about recession? Or does that again raise the fear that we have, in recent historical terms, very high interest rates, inflation persisting, and obviously those interest rates pressing down further on demand, and we get the dreaded stagflation risk? Again, I understand, you know, they may have got it right and nobody knows for sure, but let's say they are wrong and they're unable to cut rates at all, perhaps the rest of the year. How does that play out for the economy as a whole?
Look, the most likely case if we have high inflation is that we also had strong demand, so that we're fine on one side of the mandate and have a problem on the other side of the mandate. But stagflation is always a possibility. And over the last 2 months, it's not just inflation risks that have risen, but I think recession risks have risen. Not a whole lot, but a little bit. When you have that unemployment rate, as you talked about before, going from 3.4% to 3.9%, you have to pay a little bit more attention. There's not a lot of times in history, in fact, none, when you have a small increase in the unemployment rate without having a large increase in the unemployment rate. We're not quite at the threshold yet for a prediction like that, but there's no reason to rule out the possibility that you have bad news on demand and higher inflation, although I do think the most likely case is the Fed doesn't cut rates, or even if the Fed raises rates, which, by the way, I think is a real possibility.
There's a chance they may have to raise rates?
Yeah, I think it's a 1 in 5 chance that they'll have to raise rates again. I mean, if we're sitting there with a annualized inflation rate stuck above 3%, I don't think they can just say, let's wait. But they're not going to raise rates unless the economy looks strong also.
Right. Do you think politics plays any role? I know this is always the question everybody gets asked, and there's lots of interesting data. I've looked at it myself over the years on what the Fed does in election years. But again, expectations have been quite high for rate cuts. We thought we were going to get more rate cuts at the beginning of this year. The number of expectations for rate cuts has declined. You know the Fed quite well. You know the economists quite well. Do you think just, you know, no, they'll stick it out. They'll do what they have to do for the sake of the economy, whatever the political consequences?
Absolutely. Politics plays zero role there. And, you know, if they were a wing of the Biden campaign, they would have cut rates at this week's meeting. And you saw that before the midterm elections. I mean, they were raising rates. They were giving hawkish sounding press conferences that were making the stock market go down in advance of the midterms. You know, the reason we make the Fed independent is precisely to avoid politics. And I think we've done a good job. The very, very minor caveat is, you know, something like the September meeting. If they're not in the middle of already rate reducing, I actually think they might hold off cutting rates because of politics. So I don't think they'd want to make a big change in direction in September, October. But other than that little bit of smoothing there, and that goes both ways. That's not to help Biden or to help Trump, just to avoid the appearance of politics. Other than that minor caveat, they're not political.
I mean, this is unthinkable, I suppose, given the question of the Fed's credibility. But does the question of the appropriateness of the 2% target come into play at all? I mean, there's been a lot of debate about this and whether the 2% target is a ceiling or a central number or an average or any of these things. And again, I fully understand why those academic economists can have that argument. Right in the middle of a time when the Fed's credibility is so under threat, that the idea of it changing that anytime soon is off the table, right?
Yeah, they've been very clear about shutting the door to that. Could they go to a range around 2? It includes numbers below 2 and above 2 as part of the next framework review in 2025. I could see that. But I don't think they're going to even want to have a conversation of any sort about changing anything until this is definitively under control, and it's not yet.
I don't want to get too technical here, but I am fascinated by this argument that you engage in a little bit and others have too, and that is whether or not the Fed's got the right understanding or the right assessment of what economists call the equilibrium interest rate or the neutral interest rate, the interest rate in real terms that is neither sort of stimulating nor restraining the economy. You know, from the Fed's own estimates, they seem to think that is around the real rate, I think somewhere around like, you know, 1% or maybe something like that. And I think you think it's probably higher than that. Can you just explain a little bit how that works and what your thinking is about that and what it might actually mean for Fed policy going forward?
The neutral rate is this concept that is just grown in importance in recent years, in part because it appears to have just changed so much. You know, they had, right before COVID hit, interest rates were in the 2s, and that was an economy that was operating pretty normally. And so 2 was like the new 5. Now we have interest rates in the 5s and an economy operating, you know, normally or possibly even a bit on the overheated end of the spectrum. I think you have to update your estimate of the neutral rate based on all of that. There's also good reason to think it would increase. When there's more debt, the neutral rate should rise. And we have a lot more debt than we used to have. If I were putting a long run dot down, I would have put something like 3.5 rather than the 2.6 median that they had in the last SEP. I think that they probably in their heads have adjusted more than they've adjusted on paper. I mean, they're acting like they think the neutral rate is a decent amount higher than what they're writing down in their forecasts.
Oh, is that right? Because again, we're talking here about nominal rates. But so the implication of that is, again, if you're right that the neutral rate is pretty well a percentage point higher than the sort of, again, or at least let's say the long-term rate is a percentage point higher. And Powell, again, has said that he thinks they're quite a long way from the neutral rate. But if you're right, and as you say, or if the implication of some of their forecasts are right, and that does suggest that even if they do get around to cutting rates this year or whatever, and indeed we saw some of this perhaps in the forecast yesterday, a kind of a shallower interest rate outlook than we'd seen just last year. Maybe interest rates, maybe the kind of new normal, hate the term, but we're back to a new normal where rates, you know, even if they do come down a bit, they're certainly not going to come down to anything like what we've got used to before the pandemic.
I think absolutely that should be your best bet, but they'll be lower than what they were before the financial crisis, but higher than what they were before COVID. And, you know, that could be that we were just in some freakishly temporarily low situation for some reason, or it could be that something about the world changed and debt certainly changed. So I don't think anyone's assuming that we're going back to the low interest rate world of 2019. I think it's sort of funny. At the time, people were calling that secular stagnation and being all negative about it. And now it almost seems like people are missing interest rates being that low. So,
and, you know, just put it into a global context, much of the world has had negative interest rates the best part of 20 years in some countries. We've just seen Japan for the first time, Bank of Japan, move its policy rate, you know, into sort of solidly positive territory. I saw some data that the outstanding amount of government debt has been moving up. Is that, again, something that we can now expect to be another indicator that this extraordinary period that we've seen of zero or negative interest rates, that is pretty much over, and we can expect a kind of a return to sort of the economic normality that we got used to in the previous 50 years?
I think it's over. You know, you'll be in it now and then, right? I mean, if you go into a deep recession, you'll go back to zero interest rates. Some countries will go back to negative interest rates, but the staying there for 5, 10, 15, 20 plus years, you know, as you saw in Japan, I think that's over.
Finally, Jason, we've talked mainly about monetary policy and inflation. Let's look at broadly at the other economic conditions, and particularly other economic policy, and the fiscal situation. And this obviously continues to be, you know, a heavily political subject. If you like, if we can make a rather cynical point, in a highly partisan world, the one thing both parties seem to be not concerned about, shall we put it, is the fiscal position, despite the dramatic deterioration that we've seen overall in the fiscal position in the last 10 years or so. Trump contributed to a huge increase in the deficit and the debt. Biden has done it too. I realize we've had a bit of a fiscal restraint since then. How much of a concern should we have, especially in this era of maybe normalizing interest rates that we've just talked about, interest rates going back into sort of, you know, normal positive territory, that we have a federal government that has debt to GDP of around 100%? It's an obvious question. Of course, we should be concerned about it. But how do you see it as a threat to the economy, and how much of a risk is it to the economy? And indeed, what ultimately can be done about it?
Look, debt at 100% of GDP, if it could stay at that forever, that would be fine. We're a big country. You can pay the debt out over time. You can roll it over. Like if it stayed at 125% of GDP over time, that would be fine. Right now, we're not on course to either of those, though. We're on course to it ever increasing as a share of GDP. That's not fine. The questions are sort of how not fine is it? And how quickly do you need to deal with it? And I don't know. It's not at the top of my worry list. I think the investors are happy investing in the United States. I wish we deal with it sooner rather than later. But if we delay 5, 6, 7 years dealing with this, I'm pretty sure we'd be fine. I'd rather say I'm certain that we're fine. So I'd rather take out insurance by acting now. But in the grand scheme, interest rates are higher than they were in 2019. They're a lot lower than they were from 1980 or 1970 through 2010. And that's what continues to give us, you know, maybe more room than we deserve to have.
Well, again, the other sort of question that always hangs over us is the question of financial stability. When we see these sort of dramatic changes in monetary conditions that we've seen over the last few years, you know, you usually expect to see some financial fallout. We did have that, call it sort of secondary banking crisis last year. There've been a few wobbles with some smaller banks this year. And again, obviously, if expectations of policy rates change, and indeed if market interest rates change dramatically again over the next few months, there might be more wobbles. How do you see financial conditions generally at the moment? Are you reasonably confident that we have a level of financial stability that can be sustained?
You never should be too sure about financial stability. I think our banks are in pretty good shape. They do have these, you know, if you mark to market losses in their hold to maturity portfolios. But banks also benefit from high interest rates because I'm still getting, I think, 0.25% on my checking account. And I'm pretty sure my bank is doing a whole lot better when they lend that money out to someone else. So that deposit franchise is a valuable thing. The upward pressure on interest rates that you get from all of this debt helps with some aspects of financial stability. It reduces the risk of bubbles and some of the instability that we were worried about 5 years ago. And so a higher interest rate world might be not just for banks, but for the financial system as a whole, a world with less reaching for yield, less crazy projects, and more stability. Now, there's downsides too, commercial real estate, et cetera, the adjustment process to this higher rates. But by and large, I might feel better about where we are rather than worse.
But as we've discussed, things could change if the Fed needs to make any adjustments to what it's currently expecting to. Jason Furman, thanks very much indeed for joining Free Expression.
Thanks for having me.
Well, that's it for this week's episode of Free Expression. Thank you very much for joining us. I'll be back with another episode next week. In the meantime, have a great week and goodbye.